All right, how we doing? So it looks like November's here. Kind of got fooled last week, but not this week.
Bill, I wanted to ask you about practice in general and how important it is for a coaching staff, I guess, to be able to judge how the team is doing in the moment, you know, I guess physically, or where you are in a season and how that affects how you guys practice.
Yeah, I mean, Phil, that's a great question. And part of that answer is it's not the same for everybody. You know, where one guy is, or sometimes even a group is, sometimes the other, another group is in the exact opposite place. You know, one group's kind of maybe needs a little more recovery. Another group maybe needs a little more work. And so let's say we go through that throughout the year. It happens in training camp sometimes because of numbers and or experience levels and, you know, so forth. To say the bottom line is just try to do what you feel like is best for the team. And you have to take individuals into consideration, but you have to take the team into consideration too. We just can't structure everything for one or two guys and, you know, not be negligent of the other 61, including practice squad players. So try to balance that the best we can. It's not always the same for everybody. Sometimes it's guys that need more work. We try to get them more work. But, you know, we have to try to get the team ready, and that encompasses, like, all those things. There's no, I don't think really, I don't feel like there's any right or wrong answer. And I've been with on teams and with coaches that, well, when I was younger, a lot of times my job, several years there, my job was to, like, write up the practice schedule. So, you know, when we would meet and go through the schedule, then I'd write it up, put in what everybody was doing, and hand copies of that to all the coaches. And, you know, we have coaches on our staff now that do that. And I can remember I could have written the practice schedule for December, a Wednesday in December, in July, easily. And there wouldn't be one thing that was different. And, you know, a lot of times it's, all right, well, what do we do last Thursday? What do we do last, you know? And it was the exact same thing. And but that's not the way we do it. So, and I'm not saying it was wrong to do it that way, but there's sometimes just certain programs I've been in, coaches, it's just a routine. They do the same thing every Wednesday, every Thursday, every Friday, every Saturday. So you kind of always know where you are. You always know, you know. And we would do blitz pickup, you know, the other team hadn't blitzed in 2 years, or, you know, vice versa. So we kind of do it differently. We kind of talk each day about what the team needs. We have a basic structure of this is what we do, but we change that depending on what we feel like our needs are. So and that's definitely a big part of it, is the health and the I would say overall readiness of the team. And that's very subjective, obviously, but we do the best we can. In consultation with the training staff, the strength conditioning staff, position coaches, a lot of times they have a good tempo of where their individual group or particular players are, and sometimes that affects, you know, the rest of the preparation.
How much more input, Bill, is there from the training staff now as opposed to 20 or 30 years ago, night and day, or?
No, I wouldn't say so.
Still significant?
Well, they have the most hands-on feel for that. But that being said, you know, it's, they just have, you know, one perspective, not, you know, as a coach or a coordinator, you know, you have to look at a broader stroke than that. So I mean, it, you know, it's part of it, but it's, I think it's always been part of it. Yeah.
Coach, along the same way, game day coaching, do you have I know how much you adapt as the games go on, but do you have like a go-to list that you want to approach game day coaching? And was there someone or two that may have you've talked about and influenced you in terms of the way you do that?
I think there's definitely, I mean, I definitely believe in a process. I don't know that that's the same in every single game. I'd say it's not the same in every single game. Depends on, you know, who you're playing and what kind of what they do or what you anticipate them doing as to how you want to approach it. But it's, you know, it's a great question. It's a very interesting point of discussion. I think there's a lot of things to look at throughout that, but it's all critical in the communication and coordination of, you know, processing the information that you get during the game. Is I would say it's not easy to do, but it's not, I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's not easy to do because it comes from a lot of different sources, and you definitely want to prioritize it. And so I'd say those are some of the components of it. Number one, you know, getting the most important things handled, whatever they are. Could be what you're doing. It could be what they're doing. It could be the weather conditions. It could, you know, whatever the most important things are, you're making sure that you start at the top. And also, you don't have all day. So sometimes you don't even know how long you have. You know, if you're on defense, the offense could be out there for, you know, a 7-minute drive. They could be out there for a 30-second drive, you know. So, you know, you got to prioritize what you're doing so that you get the most important things first. So if you run out of time, you know, you haven't used your time inefficiently. So that's number one. You know, number two, there's the what we're doing versus what they're doing. You know, a lot of times, you know, just making sure that you're right is more important than identifying what they're doing. Sometimes identifying what they're doing, until you get that cleared up, then, you know, you're kind of spinning your wheels in the sand and you're not making any progress because you don't really understand what it is you're exactly, you know, what the issues are. So, in the game situation, so that changes all that. You know, you have information from players, which is, you know, they're in the heat of the battle. You have information from the press box who, you know, can get a good, as much of an overview as you can get. You know, you have sideline information. So that, you know, sometimes that's the same. Sometimes information, you know, isn't, you know, see it quite the same way. You know, the way one coach sees it, the way the press box sees it, the way the sideline sees it, the way a player on the field sees it, it's not quite all the same way. And then you got to kind of sort that out. So, and then there's the balance of fixing what is in the rearview mirror and looking ahead. So like, okay, yeah, we got to take care of these problems. Here's what's happened. But at the same time, you spend all your time on that. Some of that's not even relevant because the next time you go out there, okay, what are we going to do? What, you know, we've corrected those problems, but maybe we're going to make a different call, or maybe we're going to be in a different situation. How do we handle that? So there's the balancing of new information versus analysis of previous information. So, you know, there are a lot of components to that, and I think a good coach, the decision-making that they make within all that is what makes them a good coach. You know, what information is important? Where do we start? What, you know, how do we get the most information across in the least amount of time, and making sure that we get the information to the right people? You know, some coverage adjustment the guard doesn't care about. You know, he doesn't care what coverage they're running. You know, the receiver doesn't care if the nose is shaded or not shaded. You know, so, but it's, I'd say that's, you know, a very interesting part of game day from a coaching standpoint, and one that's important, it's critical, and there are a lot of components to it.
How important then is it to not get caught up in the emotion of what's going on in the field sometimes, and to be able to dissect things?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. You know, I think playing emotionless is not good. So there's a balance between, you know, I think when you're alert, when you're emotional, when you have a lot of energy, you know, that you're on a higher alert. But there's a point where that, you know, can go over the edge and, you know, be detrimental, where it's more about that than it is about the execution of your job. So there's a fine line there between, you know, poise, composure, decision making, and, you know, energy and emotion and, you know, enthusiasm. And they're all good and they're all important, but there's, you know, there's a balance there. There's got to be a balance in there somewhere. But in terms of decision making, I think you got to try to make decisions based on, you know, what's right, not you know, not where your heart is, but, you know, what's best for the football team. But in terms of, you know, talking about or conveying that to your team or to a particular unit, that's, again, discretionary and judgmental.
Is a rule of thumb, Bill, maybe that enthusiasm, congratulating your teammate on a great play is the way to go, whereas trying to get inside somebody else on the other team crosses that line, especially nowadays when they're looking to, where officials may be looking to enforce that type of penalty?
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, first of all, you never want to, like, we don't coach penalties, and so, like, we don't want penalties, we don't coach them. So judgment to do the right thing, whatever it is, tackle a guy, you know, be physical, celebrate, it's all got to be within the rules. So, I mean, that's number one. Like, we're not trying to go beyond any rule ever. But, yeah, just in general, I mean, look, these guys work hard. They work hard every day. They work hard all week. They prepare for the game. Yeah, go out and make a good play. I mean, you should be excited about it. I mean, if any of us work hard at something and it comes out well, you know, we feel good. We should feel good. And when you do it together as a group, you feel good with your group. You know, the guy who scores feels good for the guy who blocked for him. The guys who blocked for him feel good for the guy who scores. I mean, vice versa. You know, you throw a pass, you catch it. Somebody had to block, somebody had to run the route, somebody had to throw it. Somebody else took the coverage to help somebody else get open or, you know, whatever. You intercept the pass, you have a good pass rush, other guys are covered, you know, I mean. So there's a lot of team excitement on those plays. You see it on the sideline. Guy in the field makes a play, you see the bench explode. So, you know, that emotion comes out with hard work and success. It's natural. I don't think it's something that you want to restrain. At the same time, there's another play. You know, I mean, unless it's a touchdown or a drive-ending play, turnover, you know, but a lot of times there's another play. And so, you know, one good play, that's fine. But if the next play is a bad play, then it offsets it. So, you know, but again, there's a balance in there on all that. But, I don't think it's good when a team goes out and, you know, we make a good play and, like, nobody cares. I mean, I don't think that's particularly, it's not anything that I'm proud of any more than if we make a bad play and we don't care. I mean, that's, you know, make a bad play, we want to get it right. If we make a good play, we should feel good about it.
With Brandon LaFell not having the benefit of OTAs, training camp, any preseason games, how quickly did you expect him to maybe get up to speed?
Oh, it's a process, yeah. It's definitely a process for him. He's going through it and, you know, gaining on it each day, but, you know, it'll take a while. I mean, for any player like that, even a player that's been playing that, you know, missed some time and came back, a guy that missed a couple weeks, like, Shaq missed a couple weeks or whoever. Players now that have, you know, been out for a couple of weeks and come back, I mean, there's a little bit of a reacclimation process for themselves, for their confidence, and with the communication and execution with their teammates, not just communication, but actual execution of, you know, going full speed, your teammate going full speed and having the right, you know, read, feel, mesh, play off each other, whatever the play is, that's part of it too. So, that's why we practice, is to try to gain ground on that. And I think that it's a natural thing. You might see one or two plays and feel like, oh, it's great, but there's probably a lot of other plays where it isn't quite the level it needs to be, and so you keep working to get to that point.
How close do you think
it is? I don't know. Closer than it was last week, way closer than it was 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago. But again, I think it's improving each week. And I don't think that's necessarily a straight line, like it's going to show up in the stat sheet. You know, it's going to go, you know, 3 for 29, 6 for 50, you know, 8 for 96, 11 for 142. You know, I'm not saying that. Each game's different, each opportunity, group opportunities for a player is different. But again, in terms of overall level of execution, play 50 plays, you know, I think progressively you're going to see more good ones out of those 50, you know, over a period of time, 3, 4, 5 weeks, whatever it is. You know, you're going to see growth, production, better execution. You know, is it going to show up in the stat sheet? Like, oh, that's, you know, the measurement of everything for a lot of people. But, you know, I don't think that's true. But I do think that there's a, you know, a process of improvement, providing the player's healthy, works hard, you know, and is trying to get better. I mean, if you take those first elements out of it, then, of course, you're probably not going to see the results you're looking for.
Well, this is kind of off the wall a little bit, but Odell Beckham's listed at 5'11". It seems like he plays, maybe it's the spectacular catches that he has, obviously, last year against Dallas. You look at a guy like that and tell your team, you know, this guy might be 5'11", but he plays a lot taller, plays like a tall receiver.
Yeah, absolutely. But Beckham plays big. I mean, he's not a big guy, but he plays big. I mean, he's tough. You know, he plays bigger than guys that are taller and weigh a lot more than he does. But, I mean, he's a tough guy. He competes for the ball. He's hard to tackle. And like you said, I mean, he plays like he's 6'5". I don't know. I mean, he's got a great catching radius, great ball skills. So, yeah, his ability to get the balls and catch them is better than a lot of receivers that are probably 6 inches taller than him. Yeah. I mean, look, we try to evaluate every player's skills. So, I mean, are the players aware of it? Yeah, sure.
Is there a fine line between putting a bigger guy on him to defend against that kind of ability or a speedster? What's the give and take there?
Speed. Well, I mean, I think it depends. I mean, first of all, matching up a player or not matching up a player, like, that's a whole other discussion. You know, there are a lot of components to that. There's a lot more to it than just, I'll put this guy on him. But I'd say whoever's on him, you know, each individual has their own set of skills, their own set of strengths and weaknesses, and their opponent has a set of strengths and weaknesses. So it's how you match up your strengths to their strengths, or how you try to compensate for your weaknesses against that player's strengths, or how you try to attack his weaknesses, you know, whatever it is. So different players have different strengths and weaknesses, and they, you know, for the most part, try to play to their strengths. And you have, and whatever your strengths are, you have to get used to playing against different types of athletes, you know, whether it's linemen or receivers, or, you know, it doesn't matter what the position is. There's going to be some guys you're bigger than, some guys are bigger than you, some guys you're faster than you, stronger, quicker, more length, less length. I mean, like, they're, and so you learn how to match up against all those.
About Brandon a little bit earlier, and you've spoken several times about his ability to block, but it seems like, you know, he's already made contributions there. But Julian and Danny have done a lot of that as well this year for
block great
for smaller guys, or guys who may be big, blocking bigger guys. How important is their technique in making sure that they're effective there?
Yeah, I mean, technique's important, you know, willingness is important, but again, there are a lot of things that go into blocking. Number one's, you know, doing the right thing. You know, knowing who you have to block. A lot of times blocking secondary players, you have to make decisions, you know, as to which player to block, which guy's the most, you know, we always want to block the most dangerous guy, the guy that can get there first, I would say most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time. And so that decision of, you know, as I'm going to get this guy, you know, is the guy that's on me going to get there before I get to that guy? Or, you know, do I turn back on him? Do I go get that guy? Who's lined up closer, you know, those kind of decisions, taking the right angle, blocking from in front, not from behind, because there's a lot of moving targets that they're blocking. Those guys aren't always just standing there, playing with good pad level and good leverage. You know, not going in there and getting blown up, obviously, by sometimes bigger guys that they're blocking. So, you know, a lot of it's desire, a lot of it's leverage, you know, a lot of it's technique, you know, playing with a good base and, you know, getting your pad level down on contact and, you know, having your head in the proper location, things like that. But those guys have done a great job. Danny, Julian, and now LaFell back out. Those guys have blocked. They blocked really well for us all year. Runs, you know, passes, you know, slip screens or scramble plays, things like that. They've really competed well. They've helped us get a lot of extra yards. And they block for each other. So, like on Gronkowski's touchdown pass, you know, block from the receiver helps spring them, vice versa. Rob's block well for them. Like those guys, I think that's really an underappreciated part of their job, tight ends and receivers. Again, it's all about the stat sheet and, you know, fantasy catches or whatever, however that stuff works. But, you know, those guys go out there and compete every play, and that helps a lot of other guys. That means a lot to our football team.
Is Rob a terrific blocker?
Very good, yeah. It's one of the best blockers. I mean, I'll put him there with Bavaro in terms of the guys I've coached. I mean, it'd be hard for me to put anybody past Bavaro, yep, just because of the number of times he blocked Reggie White with no help. You know, I mean, we ran those, you know, 38 boss and all that, and they were in that over front, and Reggie was a six technique, and, you know, Bavaro blocked him. There was no double team. There was no, you know, he just blocked him. And now, you know, that was a good battle. Now, Reggie got him a few times, too. I mean, I've seen Bavaro block Taylor, block Banks. I mean, those were as competitive of matchups in practice as I've ever seen. I mean, it was awesome to watch players of that level compete the way they competed. And, I mean, all three of those guys were they were tremendous football players. So I would have a lot of accolades for Rob and his blocking. Just saying it's hard for me to put anybody past Bavaro based on Reggie White, Banks, and Taylor. Those guys are pretty good. I mean, I can't tell you how many times coaching Taylor, he got blocked. I mean, not very many. He didn't get blocked very often. They might have run away from him. They might have gotten, you know, they might have got it his way. But, I mean, we actually got blocked. Banks, I mean, probably count those, you know, it'd be in the single digits for me. So, but we didn't play against Bavaro, but we played against him in practice, and we played against him in training camp where there was one-on-ones and nine-on-sevens and, you know, running drills. There was no, you know, is this a pass? Do I have to reroute the guy? No, it wasn't any of that. It was, you know, I know he's blocking me. He knows he's blocking me. You know, let's have at it. And that was awesome. That was awesome. So, but yeah, Rob does a good job. And takes pride in it too. A lot of plays when Rob comes to the sideline, he's more excited about a block he made on the series than a catch he made, you know, which is, you know, I'd say you don't get that from, you know, a lot of tight ends I've coached that I wouldn't put in that category. You know, he really takes pride in it. Okay. All right. Great. Thank you.